Mike. Do you want to give Dale? Oh, and there's Mike Nowalski, too.
All right, Commissioner, you're on.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 7th. We're meeting for an informal today on a variety of cases. The big one, I would say, is JF1, case number PU12813, and then BK1, item PU13194, 195, 706, 707, 708, 742, and 743. Now, today is an informal. We actually have a formal hearing scheduled on this same thing on January 23rd. So on the 23rd, we'll be developing the official record. Today will just be, I think, an informal discussion between staff, the company, commissioners, and I guess that's my expectations. I'd turn it over to my colleagues, and then we'll see with the who should kick off first. Commissioner Fjordic, it's your portfolio
okay.
as well.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here today. Initiated this informal this morning so that we could have sort of an overview of the settlement and a more informal discussion about the matters with the parties who agreed to them. So appreciate everyone being here. For the members of the press, the advocacy staff does have their testimony that they filed, which might provide some summaries of the settlement agreement and that might be helpful for you in following through with the discussion this morning if you want those copies, right, Mike?
I have one copy here, but I can make one.
Yeah, why don't you make one for Mike, too? I guess the last couple of days really underscored, like we need to every once in a while in these parts, the importance of reliable energy in this part of the world. And I think that's ultimately what this discussion today is about, making sure that customers in North Dakota have reliable and affordable energy at their service whenever they need it. So with that, I guess I look forward to the company and staff sort of making their presentation after Commissioner Chrisman outlining what you'd like to talk about, and then we'll ask questions.
I have no opening comments. I'm ready to get started.
Okay. I would just throw one comment out before we get going is that, as I pointed out, this is a informal, and there's a formal hearing on January 23rd. I just want to get out there early that by me not asking questions doesn't mean I agree with anything that's going on, and it doesn't mean I disagree either, but I'll just be holding, I would say, almost all my questions till the formal. And for the members listening out there, I mean, this is just an informal discussion, and it's, I would ask, it's just because everybody here agrees at the table, unless the commissioners say so. I don't mean that means there's a decision by any means. So, Mitch, you're our counsel on this one. Do you have any recommendations before we get going?
No, Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General. The only thing I would comment is obviously what was discussed at the last work session on these combined matters, just that anything today is not evidence in the hearing, and to the extent this is basically like a pre-hearing conference to discuss and clarify issues to make it a smooth hearing and get the evidence that's the commission wants to hear at the hearing to make its full decision. So,
okay. I like that terminology. Fair enough. Okay. All right. So, Zeb, do you start out here? Dave, whoever you guys decide.
my name's Mike Diller. I work for the Public Service Commission. Thank you, commissioners, for taking this time. I like the round table discussions. I think it's a little more informative sometimes than the more formal procedures and more formal hearings. And so I really appreciate the extra time that you've taken for this. I'd like to also thank the settlement team that worked on this. I have to say it's an historic settlement in my mind, at least. I've never worked on anything that's this comprehensive. And a document that really, I think, lays out a clear path forward for the commission in regulating Northern States Power Company. Excuse me, I'm a little sick. So, in particular, I think because my term here at the PSC is quickly coming to an end, I would like to just take this time to give a special thanks to Mr. Cederquist. Of all the people I work with, I think he's probably my favorite. I think I think part of it's our kindred spirits, but the other part is he's open to big thinking and open to different ideas and solutions. A lot of times, people, you know, they have a hard time getting out of their little box, and I really appreciate that about Mr. Cedarquist. I think even more so given the size of his company. I don't think large companies sometimes are, you know, all that accepting of big ideas from down the chain a ways, so to speak. And so I wanted to just take that time this morning to say that. All right. last night I was trying to put my thoughts together for this morning, and I decided to go down the line of talking about the benefits of the settlement, and maybe I'll leave the cost of the settlement, so to speak. I don't, cost of the settlement maybe is a little bit of a misnomer, but let Dave Cedarquist address that more. But I'm going to specifically talk about some of the benefits of the settlement. And the first one I'd like to talk about is the settlement agreement requires us to study and determine what the best jurisdictional demand allocation should be. I laid out some of my concerns with both the 12CP and the 1CP in my pre-filed testimony supporting the settlement agreement. Studying it and making a well-informed decision will be much better than challenging the historical method without a sound record to back it up. The commission can certainly order anything it wants, but this issue is too big to think that it will not be appealed should the commission adopt by order 1CP. Advocating advocacy staff advanced the idea of 1CP from the beginning, but what you may not know is that I tried to advance the same idea in the previous rate case, not the one we're talking about today, but the previous rate case, and the witness that I had hired was unable to support 1CP from his own professional judgment. He was an expert in the area, and so I withheld his testimony in that case. In the current rate proceeding, my witness seemed a little unsure and reticent to fully adopt 1CP himself. And I only point this out to suggest that there are differences of opinion, and that this matter should be really thought out before we make a decision. It's a $20 million impact, and that is roughly 10% of NSP's North Dakota annual revenues, just to give you some perspective on the size of that decision. As decision makers, the commission is always weighing risks and benefits of one idea against another. The analytics and resulting policies put forth by the commission is what gets me up in the morning, quite frankly. In that vein, the commission should consider not only what would occur should the commission order 1CP and win in court, but what would occur if the commission does not win in court because the stakes are large. The parties have agreed to an interim refund of $4 million, worth about $21 per residential average residential customer for the 2013 test year. Without ordering 1CP, the commission will be very hard-pressed, in my opinion, to order anything larger. The settlement agreement has more or less adopted most of staff's adjustments in the rate proceeding. Last night, I called up Mr. Simpson. I thought he was on the road, and I didn't have anything else to do. Unfortunately, he was having plane issues, and so I interrupted his evening at his house, but I wanted to know what kind of time frame could we expect if the commission ordered 1CP and the company appealed it? How long would that take to go through district court and the North Dakota Supreme Court? He estimated as little as 6 to 8 months, but perhaps as long as 2 years. And so let's take the lower estimate, just for the sake of discussion, since we get things done in North Dakota a lot faster than probably what he's used to in Minnesota. The commission would order a $4 million refund around February, plus $20 million more for 1CP, or more than $120 per residential customer. Of course, if the court decides against the PSC, let's say 8 months from now to make the math easy, or 1.5 years from when the original interim rates went into effect, then the rate surcharge for the wrong decision would accumulate to $30 million, or more than $150 of makeup charges to the average residential customer for past use, and a 2014 interim rate increase on top of that for current use, because the company will file a rate increase for 2014 without a settlement agreement in this matter. Explaining that to the public, I think, would be difficult at best. There is so much at stake here that I hope you'll allow staff and the company to study the issue of jurisdictional demand and then decide the matter on a full and complete record, a well-thought-out approach, so that whatever you do, it can be supported in the court of law and public opinion. In the end, the commission gets to choose which method it uses, whether it is now or after it has been studied more thoroughly. Benefit 2 provides the commission with the ability to determine its own electric generation mix for North Dakota. Our energy policies are different than Minnesota's, and it has caused a lot of rancor between the commission and NSP. This part of the settlement is a big risk to NSP, as it will require Minnesota to pay for its own program, something it may not be willing to do, resulting in stranded investment that cannot be recovered. Of course, NSP is trusting that Minnesota will treat them fairly and that this commission will do the same, and that there will be no stranded investment. The logic seems easy to us. It just makes sense to North Dakota people that you would pay for your own localized programs. But there's still a lot of risk to the company that Minnesota indeed will pay for a bigger share of those programs that we currently are paying for. If the commission were to decide in the restacking of generation that the seabed projects, for instance, required in Minnesota were not acceptable to North Dakota ratepayers, North Dakota ratepayers would benefit about $2 million a year. If the commission decided that the biomass projects required in Minnesota were not acceptable to North Dakota, then ratepayers would benefit by nearly $6 million a year after restacking the generation mix. Going forward, if the commission finds that solar energy is too expensive and that the 1.5% mandate in Minnesota recently approved is unacceptable in North Dakota, then again, North Dakota ratepayers would benefit. Might there even be a partnership formed to build a North Dakota generation facility in the future with our other regulated utilities, whereby NSP's North Dakota operations would agree to take all of the energy for its customers? To me, this is one of the cornerstones of the settlement agreement. It is a huge deal. Excuse me. Benefit 3, if the cost projections included in the settlement agreement are too high, resulting in overcharges, the company will refund one half of the over earnings. If the cost projections are too low, then the company will not be allowed to raise its rates to make up the difference. For the people who like to have their cake and eat it too, the question might be, why don't ratepayers get 100% refund for over earnings and still not pay for any of the under earnings that might occur? I would say that does not sound very fair, and in practice doesn't work all that well. I think court arguments could be made against such a practice as well. Benefit 4, the settlement agreement contains a 9.75% return on equity for 2013, or an overall cost of capital of 7.45%, the lowest I've seen in my 30 years of experience. The settlement agreement establishes a time frame for building 400 megawatts of thermal generation in the Red River Valley. Yes, it is 2036, but we've gone 100 years without any generation in North Dakota, and so 2036 is not that long in the big scheme of things. It's not that long when you're talking about building generation units, and I suspect it'll be sooner than 2036 myself. The settlement agreement allows 350 benefit six. The settlement agreement allows 350 megawatts of new wind generation into North Dakota rates at the lowest prices we've ever seen. It will lower the overall cost of electricity to consumers. Another benefit that I'd like to bring up here is that a multiple year rate increase eliminates it costs about $500,000 each time we have a rate case. Not just the costs that I incur by hiring witnesses, but the costs that the company incurs as well. And those costs are amortized, allocated back to customers. They don't just come out of the stockholders' pockets. And so a multiple rate year settlement will save about $1 million in my mind. Another thing that I really like about the settlement is the agreement to advance the idea of time of day rates. Mr. Cedarquist and I traveled down to Oklahoma to Oklahoma Gas and Electric to really take a hard look at the program that they've initiated and the success that they've had. And if you think about it, it makes you wonder why we haven't pushed into this a little harder before now. But if you can establish rates that get people to use energy off peak, then you don't have to build these expensive generation units that we're talking about, or at least you don't have to build as many. And so that makes sense. In addition, the way that jurisdictional demand allocation factor works is it's based on demand. And if we lower North Dakota's demand through a time-of-day program, then we will pay less of the 100% of Xcel Energy's costs. We will pay less than we are today. And so I'm excited about that, and I'm excited about the commitment that NSP has made to us to make that happen. I am not going to talk about all the benefits, just to highlight a few of them. another significant benefit is that we're talking about a huge company. Xcel Energy is, I don't know, where do they rank in the world of capital companies? Top 250, is that what I think I've heard? Top 250 companies as far as capitalization goes. And they can't really tell you how North Dakota's electric operations is doing for any given month or for any given year until several months after that year has closed. And so that came about. You might remember it in the rate case proceeding. And they've committed to developing a system where, indeed, they can update financial information on a monthly and yearly basis. And so staff, commission, other regulators will have access to better information, more timely information. And on top of that, their own management will be able to manage better because now they'll know what their costs are on an ongoing basis, on a jurisdictional basis. I'm not saying that Xcel doesn't know what their costs are overall, but and so to me, it's interesting that a little bitty jurisdiction like North Dakota is driving such a large change in the company, but I think it's a change that needs to be made and I really welcome that as part of the settlement. I don't think I'm going to talk much more, Dave. I'm going to let you take over. I will say this, that I understand the 3-5% rate increases in a row are a big deal. I do. I understand that. I'm not trying to suggest by going through all these benefits that they somehow outweigh the costs. It's not really a cost-benefit analysis. The cost part of this is the cost of doing business. If you spend $2 billion on CapEx, which the commission has provided ADPs on, if you spend $1 billion on nuclear enhancements and improvements and allow those things to run for another 20 years, somebody has to pay for those. And so I know that that is a little bit of a sticking, at least I'm trying to put myself in your place. I know that would be a little bit of a sticking place for me, and I just want to acknowledge that I'm not, I understand that. And I understand that we've never done this before. And so that's another little bit of a hurdle for people to overcome. I think I'll turn it over to Dave to talk and fill in the gaps a little bit. Yeah, unless you want to ask me questions right now.
Well, I think it'd be better to, well, a lot of different ways to do it, but I would certainly see if my colleagues have, I have a comment, but I'll see if they have any questions for Mike before I move on.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping we'd wait with questions until the whole presentation was done.
Okay. Randy, do you have anything?
Good for me.
I would just have a comment, Mike, that as we talked about, this is more of an informal pre-hearing. But I'll be asking a lot of questions about what you just talked about, but I will expand the questions about your comments about the seabed projects. My understanding upon research is the competitive bid process that Xcel Energy is one of the only companies that has to do that. It doesn't apply to Otter Tail. So there's something in Minnesota law that somehow Xcel has to fall under that caveat, which has become a big issue in this rate case. And so the concerns I'll have is that did Xcel lobby to be able to do these kind of things to be able to make it easier to pick their own generation? Xcel was a company that was very adamant about lobbying for a cap and trade, while other investor owns and generations and transmission in North Dakota lobbied against it. So I'll ask you and them a lot of questions about it. And as far as your legal analysis, all the attorneys decide on what kind of record can withstand Supreme Court review. So I'll just put that right out there for everyone. So, fair enough. Anything else? Dave?
Did you want me to respond?
No, at the hearing. At the hearing, I'll ask those questions to build the record.
Sure.
Okay, well, thanks, commissioners. We really are glad to be here. We appreciate this kind of forum to talk about the settlement. I think our goals are the same as yours, to increase understanding what's in there, how does it address some of the issues that have come up in the case. I would like to recognize the staff, Mr. Diller, Ms. Cardwell, and Mr. Norrell. When we came in early December and asked them, can we do a push here and get this thing settled, they cleared their schedules and made time for us, and in a very short time, they accommodated us. They were good hosts. They had a real roll up the sleeves kind of can do attitude and a eye on the big picture. So we really appreciate that, and it was very rewarding to work with them. I'd also just like to say that as a company, you know, we acknowledge that there were times in this case when we really tried your patience as a commission. We regret that, and we're sorry for any of the delays that we may have caused to this point. We think we have a good product here. I'm like Mike. I think it's a historic settlement, and we just thank you for your willingness to consider it. To be sure, it has some rate impacts in the near term, but I think if you look in the long run here, you know, it provides the potential for some long-term savings, definitely has some regulatory clarity and efficiency long-term, and I think it'll even improve service. So this is a game changer, as Mike has alluded to. You know, he talked about the pros and cons of the settlement, and of course, I would, from my perspective, I would define them as the cons and the pros. And I liken the settlement a lot to the game of Jenga here. I'm going to use some of these slides here. If you've ever played the game of Jenga, it's a tower made up of many smaller wooden blocks. And the game ends when someone takes away from the tower, you know, one of the foundational pieces, and the tower comes crashing down. And as Mike alluded to, you know, this settlement's made up of a lot of different parts and pieces too. And if you look at any one of them in isolation, you know, yeah, there's some that we're not all that fond of, and there were some that staff, I'm sure, wasn't too thrilled to have included. But, you know, the effort of the give and take effort during the negotiations, we think, you know, it resulted in a set of actions and commitments that, in the whole, is going to be better for customers in North Dakota. It's going to be fair for the company as well. And we think it does a pretty good job of addressing a lot of your policy concerns, some of them that Mike touched on. So I would just encourage the commission when you're, you know, that you carefully consider the trade-offs in the settlement when you're evaluating whether the settlement is good for North Dakota or, you know, whether it's preferable to the alternative, you know, filing rate cases and those kinds of things, because it is a package deal. So from our perspective, we identified probably four key commission concerns that we tried to address in the settlement. These are the concerns that shaped the settlement, quite frankly. You know, mitigating the customer rate impacts of our investment program. As Mike says, you know, these are used and useful investments. They're providing service, reliable service. We need to be able to recover the cost. So the question becomes, you know, how to do that. Insulating North Dakota from some of the state energy policies that we are seeing, you know, in particular from across the border, but certainly it could come from other states too. You know, how to do that, and that's the very significant part of this that Mike talked about. Facilitating investment in North Dakota. I'll talk about that a little bit more. But lastly, getting the information that's needed to really evaluate this demand allocation issue. That is another big part of what we talked about. The settlement does provide value to customers in that it does lessen the bill impacts of our investment plan during this four-year period. We are going to be spending about $1 billion on our nuclear facilities so that they can run another two decades. That's the brunt of the investment program. We have other expenditures we're making to some of the other plants as well, Sherco, King, Riverside. We're going to be retiring the Black Dog plant. There are some dollars that are out there that are significant. So the multi-year rate plan prescribes fixed 5% annual increases for the first 3 years and then a rate freeze in that fourth year. We are not allowed to file a general rate case during that four-year term that would increase base rates before 2017. So that's the deal. And in addition, as Mike alluded to, there is a sharing mechanism. So if we are experiencing any over-earnings or any earnings in excess of the authorized level, we will provide some protection to customers with the sharing. And, of course, if the earnings are lower, then we're on the hook fully for that. There's no provisions for us to recover any of the underrun. So in addition to softening the bill impacts, these rate terms offer greater rate predictability for customers. That's particularly important for a lot of our commercial customers. And in addition, the multi-year approach will eliminate the costs and the time and the resource commitments that, you know, there are for filing and hearing these rate cases. And, you know, this one's gone over a year now. I mean, it can be expensive and time-consuming. And since customers have been paying an interim increase of about 8% since last February, the terms of this settlement will generate an interim refund. We expect it to be over $4 million in the first half of 2014, about $21 per customer. So the plan, the base rate component of it here, in combination with the transmission rider and the North Dakota renewable rider, they do provide us with an opportunity to achieve reasonable financial results during the 4 years. We'll have to keep our eye on the ball because there are, you know, there's always the chance of unanticipated capital or O&M costs, and given the fixed nature of these base revenues, we'll need to continue to manage that. Now, staff has expressed some wariness of the upward pressure on our rates. Mike is watching that, but I will tell you that we are also very mindful of our rates. We are not ignoring what's happening with our rates. We you know, we know that a key factor in the economic vitality of our service area is access to reliable and competitively priced rates. So we understand what our role is in North Dakota from that perspective. So we've modeled our rates going forward. You can see on the graph here that under the terms of this settlement, our average residential rates will continue to be well below the light blue national projections and even below the already low-priced Midwest regional residential rates. And, you know, as we showed during the public input session, you know, North Dakota is a very, very low-cost state. These are the average residential rates for each of the 50 states in the country. I've updated this now to reflect 2012 data. The North Dakota average residential rate's 9.06 cents, and ours is 9.09. So we're right in the mix when it comes to low rates here in North Dakota. Now, the settlement also calls for a significant change in the way energy supply resources are assigned to North Dakota. Basically, the settlement requires that a framework be developed and approved by this commission that results in North Dakota customers paying for a mix of resources that's consistent with North Dakota policy. It's that simple, but it's really not that simple. There's a lot of work to make this happen. We'll be working with staff to file a proposal and a framework by mid-2015. And we refer to this process of reassigning these resources as a restacking of the generation or the supply portfolio. So this will be the mechanism that will enable the commission to customize, basically, the resource mix that North Dakota customers are paying for. It's something that we feel the commission has wanted to do, and so we're starting it up with this settlement. It'll be complex, and it'll undoubtedly involve other jurisdictions as well. So the settlement does establish time in here for the company to work with staff to file the framework. If, however, an agreement can't be filed by mid-2015, there is a provision in the settlement here that would require the company to remove 21 renewable purchase power contracts from our fuel clause rider and replace 3 baseload biomass contracts totaling about 115 megawatts, replace those with a proxy cost based on our King coal-fired unit. In addition, it would also reprice one of our company-owned wind projects in Minnesota using our average system cost. So the monetary impact of that kind of an action would be somewhere between $5 and $6 million of reduced rates. Generation in North Dakota. I'm proud to say that in recent years we've really taken some great strides to get generation in the state of North Dakota. Today we look forward to the construction of about 350 megawatts of wind in North Dakota that we're responsible for to add to the 12 megawatts that we buy from up by Velva. And we also devoted a lot of effort in developing a proposal for 2 natural gas CTs in North Dakota near the Hankinson area. It was no small project. It appears, of course, that particular project will likely not be built at this time, but I think it does demonstrate that we view North Dakota as a very viable location for generation. So with this settlement, we are underscoring, if you will, our recognition of the value of generation in North Dakota. We will adjust our planning criteria to reflect the value of some geographic diversification of our fleet, to value the regional reliability benefits. We do anticipate multiple capacity needs in the next 20 to 25 years. So in our next resource plan, which we'll file here in North Dakota sometime this summer, I believe, we will specifically identify a North Dakota resource to satisfy a future capacity need. So that by 2036 and quite possibly before, we'll have a plant located here in North Dakota. Demand allocation. This case has really shown how how great the financial significance of demand allocation is when it comes to rate making. And in response to the Commission's interest in this issue, the settlement requires the company to submit by July 1 of this year a study, a demand allocation study, that'll provide the information that you need to address the issue in the future. The study will evaluate various allocation methods, including the 12CP, the 1CP, and Mike has even expressed an interest in an allocator that is actually made up of a combination of factors. There are several different methods out there. So the analysis will be conducted with staff. It's not just going to be us going back and putting the study together. We're going to be working with staff, staying on track with what they want to see. So it'll be a collaborative effort, and we're going to probably assess things under the criteria that the Commission has used in previous cases, namely, what most fairly apportions cost based on the cost causation principle. The consistency with other jurisdictions is another criteria. Being understandable, easy to administer, and a factor that doesn't create large swings in costs or have a lot of volatility. That's also pretty important, so that the Commission doesn't approve something and then a year later we're reporting vastly different results just simply because of the volatility of the allocator. So we agree that in the interim, though, it would probably make sense to hold off on making a change to the allocator until the information has been developed and the Commission has had a chance to review it and act on it in a future rate case. I think Mr. Diller captured it well in his written testimony. He suggested that this study approach allows the Commission to make a more informed judgment before, and I quote here, making a dramatic change on an issue that will likely have significant ramifications to the health of the financial health of the company and the service that we provide. Other terms, there are many. Mike touched on them. You see them here listed. I might just draw a couple of examples. The reliability initiatives that the Commission prompted in our last case, we are extending those initiatives, the $50 credits for customers who've been inconvenienced with multiple outages, our cable replacement initiative, our higher expenditures on tree trimming, those kinds of things. We are going to extend those throughout the term. Mike mentioned the time of day rate. Sarah has some good ideas on the tariff book improvements. You know, those tariff books, they tend to be adjusted here and there, and over the years they get a little bit out of sync. So she's got some good thoughts on how to make some of the language in there easier to understand and more up to date. So lots of stuff going on, really a lot of work. So I don't know if it would be even possible to file a case, with all the projects that a settlement like this puts in front of us. So I think that's about it, and I don't avail myself. We have even folks ready to take a call. By the way, Steve Wishart, our resource planner, is on the phone, so if you have any questions about anything to do with the resource stack or the remix, feel free to. And we're also interested in just hearing your observations, too, about the settlement. So thank you.
Thank you, David. The is like when I talked with Mike, I just had a couple of questions that I'll explore more in the hearing. I'll throw those out there. I'll ask a lot of questions about what we do if you don't do what you're supposed to, what you say you're going to do. The company has made commitments to the Commission in the past that haven't been followed through. So I'll ask a whole slew of questions about what legal authority, what penalties, what we can do if you say you're going to build something and you don't. And then also about, are you willing to have a larger number early on the rate increase in future years? So let's just throw out there 9%, 10%, 12%, 15% or whatever the first year, then 0, 0, 0. I think that'll be a significant line of questions. And the last one, if you'd be willing to, and if the system supports those same Intel switches in Grand Forks and Minot that we put in Fargo, the last rate case. I supported extra money for those switches in Fargo, and if they needed in the Grand Forks and Minot, that'd be something I think consider. So that would be all that I'll ask. And thank you guys for coming out today. So,
thanks for all the work that you guys did putting this together. The innovation and the creativity is appreciated and gives us a lot to think about and try to understand and weigh moving forward. I don't know if this is a question for Steve or Mike or Dave or whoever it is, but the beauty of this proceeding is anyone can jump in at any time. So I'm interested in more information about the drivers. Like, so you had a rate increase in 2007, had a rate increase in 2010, two of them. Got a rate increase now, and now this would provide two more rate increases. That's a really long build-out. If you look historically, your other build-outs have not taken that long and required that many consecutive rate increases on customers. So I'm really curious, what is it that's driving those costs?
I'll start with a list here of some of the large capital projects that these are the dollar amounts for the years 2013 to 2016. You can see that they're substantial. Those are millions of dollars. Many of them have to do with our nuclear plants. The commission is aware of the Prairie Island steam generator project. You know, we've had the same steam generators in that plant for 40 years, and they're being replaced now. It's, by the way, no other nuclear plant in the country has had that kind of a scenario. So those are being replaced in order to run the plant 20 more years. Monticello is actually, we've expanded the capacity at Monticello by 71 megawatts. So we, in effect, are adding some nuclear baseload. People think nuclear is dead in some respects, and a lot of companies are getting out of nuclear. We're staying in, not only staying in, but we're expanding our nuclear capacity. Prairie Island had already been increased about 20 megawatts, so looking at 90 megawatts overall of. But it's expensive to run them. It's expensive to meet the compliance requirements. There are Fukushima-related requirements that we're meeting. Cybersecurity is another big issue. We're doing a lot of substation upgrades. Even in North Dakota, there's a lot of work being done in Fargo on Cass County sub. Of course, there's going to be a new substation, the Bison sub, between or out by Mapleton area west of Fargo.
Are they just worn out? I mean, are they just like need, they're old and they need these improvements or what's?
Some of the substations in the Fargo area are being upgraded. They're being, having new transformers installed, additional transformers. Mm-hmm. They're moving some transformers around to better, provide more flexibility at the substation. They're putting some new lines in place, new transmission lines. So there's a lot of work. And, you know, some of it prompted, rightly so, by the incident in 2009 where we had a large outage, a substation-related outage on a very nice day. So, a lot of work's being done to make sure that doesn't happen again. You can see that our Sherco King Highbridge plants all have projects. Now, I've got some more detail on those. For example, on the Sherco plant, the cooling tower needs to be replaced. There's a high-pressure feed water heater that needs to be placed. King has an aging boiler, and there are sections of that are going to be worked on. Coal and turbine controls, these don't mean a lot to me, but there's a lot of parts to those plants that need replacing and need regular maintenance. So, and they're all, they cost a lot of money to do that work. So what you're looking at is $1.5 billion right there on just those projects. And the list goes on. Those are the largest. And, of course, there's almost $1 billion in transmission. But, as you know, those types of costs would be recovered in our transmission cost rider, which is also included in the mm-hmm. – so those wouldn't necessarily be drivers of the base rate percentages. But these would be.
And you anticipate those being completed in 2016, and then is there a whole other round of new ones beyond that? Or?
There are many of those that actually won't be completed in 2016. These are just the expenditures during this time frame that we're trying to match with the agreed-to rate increases. We're trying to match as best we can the cost impacts of those projects with the revenue. I would say that there's a fairly likely chance that for 2017, we'll be looking at possibly another filing. But, you know, that's a long ways away, so it's hard to say. Hopefully not. Hopefully we'll be able to go even longer without one. But
so do you think the industry is kind of changing and customers should get away from this notion that there's this build-out time and then this period of relatively flat rate increases that, you know, that it's just the technology and the way the system works, it's we're going to have, like, regular rate increases?
No, I think there's definitely cycles. I mean, these projects are large projects, but there will be a time when our investment cycle will be lower, and another utility will probably have be on a different investment cycle. So there's always, you know, there's always times when your system needs the refresh. This happens to be the time for us. We're not seeing a lot of growth in our service area, to be honest. So when your equipment needs to be replaced, it's not like the 70s where you can build a power plant and there's so much growth that, you know, it's easily stomached by ratepayers. Some of these things just, you know, they're going to create upward pressure on rates, and that's just the way it is. But, you know, if you have a 40-year-old nuclear plant, you don't run that on a shoestring. You don't run that mediocre. You run that to run well, and those plants run very well.
I would just add that, you know, there are different kinds of investments. Like we've talked in the past, we're working through a system refresh. So take, for example, at the Sherco plant, you know, the bottom of the boiler, it's just old and it needs to be replaced, and that's the sort of thing we replace it now, and it's not sort of a recurring sort of investment. You know, they need new electronics at the plant because they can't get spare parts anymore. Well, that's something that carries you over for several years. That's the sort of system refresh that I think we're coming out of that cycle. But it's not to say that the company has to stop investing in other things, you know, to continue to meet our service obligations, you know, in the future.
And the part about the coming out of the cycle is what I think is confusing for customers. If we were to approve a 3-year, you know, settlement that provides rate increases for the next, a 4-year settlement that provides 3 consecutive rate increases, that doesn't sound like coming out of a refresh to me. So when did this start?
When did it start?
It's been several years. Yeah. It started several years ago, and we're seeing 2015, 2016 as sort of the culmination of that refresh. But I think what I'm trying to say is I think you have to look at it as sort of as two different buckets. There's this refresh bucket. This is replacing stuff, you know, extending the life. You know, when a nuclear plant, its license is expired. So to extend the life, that costs money, but that's sort of in the nature of a refresh, mm-hmm. I think. But there's also other things that the company has to invest in. To meet growth and demand and our obligations, you may have to build new transmission just to keep the system reliable. When there's growth and demand, things like the new, you know, any new CTs that get built. That's, again, the sort of non-type of refresh investments that utilities are always making. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner, we filed a case in 2007. That was the first case since 1992. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for sort of a start on that 2008 time frame, you know, we were actually repowering and refurbishing 3 fairly major coal plants in the metro area. 2 of them became natural gas plants. 1 of them, you know, was retrofitted with state-of-the-art pollution control equipment. That was $1 billion right there. So those projects are done. Now we're moving into the nuclear plants. Sherco is Sherco is now close to 40 years old. So we're still in that cycle. It's it doesn't just last a couple of years. It's we're doing a lot of work. And then I guess the transmission is another big piece. I've brought it up. I mean, the CapEx project is an absolutely gargantuan transmission rollout, build out. But transmission, we haven't done anything like that for 30 years either. So
mm-hmm. I sort of eliminated all the transmission.
Yep.
Discussion and thoughts and analysis because you've asked for a rider
sure.
to cover that separately, so that would be on top of these So that would be another increase for customers, effectively, is the transmission rider.
Yes.
And the renewable energy rider as well, and the fuel cost rider. So.
Yep.
And fundamentally, one thing to look at is, you know, we think a lot of these investments are consistent with what it takes to run a utility prudently. And, you know, we see the rate plan and the need to recover these costs as the sort of fundamentals of how you set rates for us to recover our prudent cost of service and earn a reasonable rate of return. And we think when you look at the 5 years, the 4 years, it allows us to cover what we think these are would be more or less supported by the commission and earn a reasonable rate of return or a negotiated rate of return, while at the same time shifting all that risk to the company. Because if we don't hit our numbers, if we don't manage to this locked in rate increase, then it's on us. We have no opportunity to make up the shortfall without sort of a multi-year plan. Well, if we have a shortfall, we're in for a rate case the next year. If our forecasts were no good, well, now we got to go make up those dollars, and so we're in for a rate case the next year. And what this really does is it incentivizes us to go ahead and say, well, we know we're spending a lot of money on refreshing the system, and we know how much we're going to take in, and so now we have to manage to that specific level. And we think that that's not a bad way to do this. So I would leave you with that as well.
Is it possible to overcharge without overearning?
What do you mean by that?
Can you charge customers too much, yet not overearn? So you wouldn't. I mean, Mike basically said that's the safeguard in this for customers is that if you overcharge, you'll overearn. So I'm wondering, is it possible to overcharge and still not overearn so customers wouldn't see it? So maybe some of the investments you are making aren't necessarily prudent. Or I'm just curious about that scenario, especially Mike, because you're the one that said that was the safeguard in your consumer advocacy mind of the multi-year approach.
Well, you certainly could overcharge customers and still under-earn if you were operating in an imprudent manner,
mm-hmm.
right? I don't think that we've made the case for that. Advocacy staff has not made the case for that. I think that you do have. I mean, we can get into that discussion a little more about the sharing and the not sharing of the under recoveries. I posed a question of like maybe what would the commissioners be thinking? Why would we ever share why would we only get half of the over earnings? In my mind, I'll tell you really what got me thinking about this thing is my long-term employment with two states, Oklahoma and North Dakota, and being a budget manager for this commission at one time. And so if you don't have some kind of sharing mechanism in place, then what typically happens is you just try to manage your costs up to the maximum level, right? I mean, that's what you do. That's what we don't do that, I guess, here. But a lot of state agencies would spend money more at the end of the biennium than they would at the beginning of the biennium. So to me, I get that thinking. I get that argument. But I think that it's a long-term value to ratepayers of having the company with some skin in the game, some incentive to earn perhaps even more than what we've agreed to in the settlement agreement. I think that's better than having a company just try to manage its costs to whatever is set each time. That's a policy thing for commissioners to decide, and I get that.
Commissioner, we do expect, from what our forecasts show, we do expect a drop-off in the capital expenditure cycle out in that 2016-17 timeframe. So we kind of devised and designed the fixed increases to get us through this period. And, you know, like I said, we're hopeful that when we come out the other side of the 4 years, we won't need to file. So the other thing is to mention too as well is we have agreed to an ROE here as part of that what do we need to recover in rates. We've agreed to an ROE here that's fairly low. I mean, in 9.75 is the lowest ROE I've ever heard of in North Dakota in the 20 some years I've been working up here. I don't know if Mike can recall anything lower. It does move to 10% in the next 2 years and then 10.25%, but you know, to reflect the long-term risks here, staff was willing to move it up a little bit. But so that's just another consideration too when you talk about overcharging. We're setting the bar fairly low that way.
I'm glad Dave followed up with that because I thought they were underselling a little bit the end of the cycle. And, you know, how long can this recession continue? I like to think that it can't continue on forever, that NSP is going to have additional revenues in the future. Can we count on it? No. But 2016 is, you know, a lot can change in the next 3 years. 3 or 4 years. And so I guess I'm hopeful that the economy does come back and that instead of rate increases, maybe at the end of this thing and the cycle's all over with and now we're just depreciating stuff, that maybe there can even be a situation where there's a rate decrease in the future. We've had situations like that in the past after we got through a spending cycle. And so intuitively, I think, okay, you're spending all that money on transmission, all this money on all your main generation units. That's the biggest part of your capital outlays. And after you get all that refreshed, there has to be a serious decline in needs going forward. So I appreciate Dave's follow-up there.
Randy?
I really get concerned. I guess I'm maybe a skeptic of Washington, D.C., but I get concerned when I hear people talking about if we can just get enough money for this big spending surge for 4 years or X number of years out, then our spending's going to be curtailed after that. And so I'm a skeptic of that kind of thing. But can you go back to your chart that was pretty early in your presentation that graphed out average residential rate charges? So this is just the North Dakota jurisdiction of XL, correct?
Yes.
And the green line is for all Midwest utilities.
Yeah, we have a 7-state area that we track. We've been tracking it ever since the performance-based days of the early 2000s, and we continue to watch those utilities. So that's what comprises the green line.
So about where would XL as a whole be if that line was on there?
As a whole with all jurisdictions?
Right.
It would be probably between the green and the blue.
So it'd be above the green?
Yes.
Okay, so wouldn't it be a more fair characteristic, a more fair thing to chart to compare your North Dakota jurisdiction to other North Dakota utilities?
And we do that as well, yes.
I mean, that would seem like
the reason
a
that
more
this
accurate thing to compare than just your North Dakota jurisdiction to a bunch of Midwest companies.
The reason why we find value in this is because when we think of bringing in industry into North Dakota and having people look at North Dakota as a potential place to locate a business or a plant, we want North Dakota to have the advantage. And so, you know, they're going to be looking at certainly places within North Dakota, but as long as we can get them in North Dakota, that's the end game there. So we like to compare ourselves to, well, what are the prices for energy in South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa. So that's where we find a lot of value there. But we do chart, and I showed that chart at the public input session last April, how we compare to North Dakota. We're right in the mix, actually, right in the middle of all the IOUs and the co-ops and the munis. So, again, as I was telling Mike one time, you know, we're not sounding an alarm. We're feeling pretty good about being in the middle of one of the lowest priced states in the entire country. And, yeah, we're aware that we're in this cycle and our rates are going up. But at some point, everyone's got to go through that cycle, and we're going to be in good position in the future is our belief.
Well, with their low rate of customers per mile of line and that sort of thing, I don't know if the co-ops are the best comparison either. But I think at the formal coming up, we should have this chart, but with basically Otter Tail and MDU's rate comparison with too, because it's not only, I guess in my perspective, it's not only a matter of getting people to come to North Dakota, but they should have fair rates regardless of where in North Dakota they are too.
Sure. Yep.
I have to also tell you that the study of the allocation method, just because it is such a huge deal financially, is the purpose of the study to reinforce the decision that we're talking about making early in 2014, or is it to find out what is the proper method going forward the next time the decision is before us?
The point of that study is to lay it all out. You know, look at all of these different allocators that we want to look at. Obviously, we have to sort of limit that a little bit. But within those criteria that I mentioned before, here's how they all compare. You know, maybe there'll be a scoring methodology that we'll do to just kind of see how they all stack out. But it's to get the information, Commissioner. It's, you know, obviously we believe that once that information is out there clearly, it's going to, you know, we believe that the 12CP is the best method, and it'll bear that out, but maybe not. Maybe there's some other method that'll, you know, surprise us, but it's to get the information. And it's to answer any questions that, quite frankly, that staff wants answered. So we haven't really met to totally scope out that project and how that's going to work, but that's
you talked about
it just seems to me that if, not if, this is a really big deal as part of this mm-hmm. equation. And so if the study were to be done to really learn something, it would be done before the decision is made, either before this decision is made on this rate case or shortly before a decision is made the next time a rate case is before this commission. Doing a study of this right after a decision is made, knowing that by the next rate case it will be outdated anyway, if the study were to find that we made a mistake, but the company still believed strongly and still wanted to have the current allocation method, by 3-4 years from now, I'm sure the company would just say, well, that was all kind of dated. That's not really the case. Let's stick with what we got, and then we'll study it right after again. So I really see this whole study as just something to kind of cover our rear ends here a little bit and show that we made the right decision.
Go ahead, Zach.
Commissioner, I understand your concerns. And in a lot of ways, sometimes somebody says, shucks, we'll just – don't worry about that. We'll just study it. And I don't think that's really what we're getting at. I think what we've tried to do in the settlement is take what we've seen as a lot of the historic concerns of this commission and address the ones that we've been grappling with long term, which is really this energy policy issue. Like Mike mentioned, he tried to raise the 1CP in the previous rate case, but he didn't bring that testimony forward. And so this rate case is really the first time the company has actually been looking at the demand allocator in North Dakota for almost 20 years, since the 90s when we first sort of set on the status quo path. And so what the settlement does is it allows the status quo to stay in place, and we think this is a significant enough issue that there should be more than enough information, not just witnesses trading testimonies and advocating for a particular position, but really a holistic look at it. And some of what I'm hearing is your concern is that, well, you say you adopt the settlement and then we bring you a study 6 months later, what good is that study? And that's probably valid, and I think we'd be willing to work with not just staff but also the commission. I could envision a process where we have 6-8 months to produce a study. We work with staff to make sure the parameters are correct. Then we could bring it to you guys, and we can sit around a table like this and discuss it, make additional changes. But certainly the goal of the study is to ensure that there is a very comprehensive look at this issue so that in the next rate case, everybody understands it, understands the implications of it, understands the implementation issues, the issues with stability, and all those holistically look at the demand allocator issue, and that study would provide that baseline understanding for all the parties involved.
I think the provisions in the settlement recognize, too, that the current method, which has been in place for literally two decades, is not going to be that far off of any whatever is finally decided. So it just seems wise to not jump on something unless a study and the information is provided like what we are contemplating doing. It is definitely a longer-term approach and view of this issue, but it's such a big issue that it just seems that longer-term approach is going to be more helpful.
I just think either it's important and we get it done before we make a decision, or we not have it sitting around that we have to dust it off in 4 years from now to give it consideration. If we're not going to do the study before we make this decision, we might as well put off doing the study until years down the road and have it be something that needs to be done shortly before a rate case is filed again.
Certainly that's something that we think would be within the spirit of the settlement. The settlement makes explicit that whatever study we perform can be used as evidence in the next rate case, and if it would be the commission's preference that such a study be developed either as part of the rate case or just prior to filing the next rate case, I'm sure we can accommodate those desires. It's important to the company, and I think probably important to staff, that everybody have sufficient input so that whatever the final work product that makes up the study isn't just an advocacy piece, but really does address everything that all interested parties want to have in it.
If the company really took it seriously, that it's something that perhaps there is merit to a change in it, as opposed to something that will get a study that defends what we want anyway, mm-hmm. It would have been done by now.
Well, I might add just one other thing here. I think one of the benefits of doing it earlier is that it gives, you know, this allocation factor is used in South Dakota and Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota, Michigan. If we discover, and that's to your question, Annie, my tact is this is discovery. This is figuring out what the right method is. And if we discover and find that there's a better method and we document it well and have all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, then Xcel Energy could take that and present it to other jurisdictions. It's not going to happen overnight. It takes a while to transition that to a different allocator altogether. I know they don't think that's where it's going to go, but in my mind, it could go that way. And again, we could be the driver of policy, not just the recipients of somebody else's policy.
To that end, did you talk at all about involving the other jurisdictions in the study? Because that, when I look at this cost allocation, it feels like the company is very committed to its current situation. But I step back and think you want complete recovery of your costs, And you get that with this current allocation. If everybody was on a weighted 12 CP, then you'd get it too. So it's not maybe perhaps this specific one. It's just that everybody is using it, and you can be assured that you're going to recover all your costs. So to me, a more meaningful way to address this in the settlement would have been some sort of study that recognized that we don't operate in a bubble. That's one of the big catches in this issue moving forward. So if we really want to, which I think you're hearing this commission does, question whether we're being unfairly paying for more than our share of the costs, then that should include all the jurisdictions. And is that realistic? Could we work on something like that and tweak this study to involve the others?
Yeah, well, as I said, you know, we haven't really defined the study. That's an excellent suggestion and probably would make a lot of sense when we scope out this project is who do we want to involve, you know, and what, and even not only the immediate area, but, you know, what are the utilities using? I mean, do we really know what is being used out there? And are there other multi-state utilities somewhere in the country that are dealing with this issue? And what are their load profiles for their states? So I think it's an excellent suggestion to involve the other jurisdictions up front. And Commissioner Christman, just to get to the timing aspect a little bit, you know, if we file a study in the mid-2014 timeframe, you guys review it, you know, maybe take 6 months to review it and act on it even, you know, we're already looking at 2015. It's not like there's this four-year waiting period. I mean, time, it takes a while to do this. It takes a while to assess it. And, you know, it might not be all that long before an opportunity avails itself to actually act on it. So
I have another question about, this is more of a nitty-gritty thing, but when it comes, I think is going to result in customers being charged more. So why did advocacy staff agree to allow the fuel cost rider revenues to be used along with upcoming test year base revenues for the baseline and applying the 5% increase? And how much do you estimate that increases the costs to customers?
I didn't calculate that. That reminds me of my days serving Susan Weefald, because she was, that's not a 10% increase, that's a 20% increase when you take fuel out of it. The rate increase applications that the company file are on total revenue basis. And so that's the way we've always done it, and that's the way we continue to do it. I do get your, I understand what you're saying there, that I think you're...
So are all the riders then? Does that include then the transmission rider?
No, the riders aren't part of it, no.
You said
but
it includes
base
revenues
and oh. And fuel costs.
Oh.
The fuel costs, not excluding the transmission recovery rider and the wind or the renewable rider, yeah.
Commissioner, if I may, one of the things that when we express these increases in terms of percentages, we're trying to make sure, too, that the public and our customers understand that when we say a 5% increase, it's like a 5% increase to them, to their bill. So if we're going to focus only on the non-fuel piece and we end up with some kind of a 13% increase or higher number, then that can be confusing to the public when they hear that. They don't understand the nuance of fuel and non-fuel.
Right.
So that's kind of a little bit of the background with the percentages. And so to have the 5% be sort of relative to the 9% that we asked for, we wanted to stay on that same basis.
Mm-hmm. And I'd be interested in you each side saying, here's what we had to give, and here's what we got in return. And this is why we think this is good. I mean, you kind of outlined the benefits, but I haven't really heard, like, where did you have to give, and you get likewise the company.
Mine's easy. I don't know about the company, but 5, 5, and 5. I mean, that's a lot of give.
And what did we get? What did customers get?
Well, you've got essentially at the end of this cycle, you have essentially a new system, so to speak. And then I went over a lot of the benefits. The restacking of generation is a huge one. I think waiting and getting the jurisdictional cost allocation factor right is a benefit to everyone. I mean, I'm a little worried that if we went down that trail and then we found out that the courts didn't agree with us, that of just the ramifications of that, it's so huge. I don't want the commission to have to try and explain that. I mean, so let's try to get it right. I guess I could pull
up. Did
you
also weigh in agreeing to the settlement, Mike, on behalf of customers? What if we don't do this and they come in and we could have had a 5% increase and now we have an 8 or we have a 10?
yes. Yes, that's true. I think that Zev or Dave laid that out pretty clearly, that we're trying to manage these improvements, these costs, over the next 3 years, 4 years, really, recognizing that this 5, 5, and 5 is really significant. And so could it be more? I guess if we don't accept the settlement, we'll find out. That's kind of, I don't have a crystal ball, but we'll find out. We'll be able to look back and go, that was a bad decision, or that was a good decision. But we'll know one way or the other.
And from the company standpoint, you know, the final settled 5 for the test year is significantly lower than our original request. We're agreeing to historically low ROEs, which is a significant financial issue for the company as well. We are locking in and foregoing our rights to come in for rate cases for a period of years. We are agreeing to an absolute to a zero base rate increase in the final year of the rate plan. And based on our forecasts and calculations, this total revenue that we've put together just gets us to, if not just slightly below, the authorized ROEs. And so the way we see it is this is a bare minimum dollars that covers our investment cycle or our system refresh. As that tails off in 2016, we've accepted a zero increase because we see this as the amount of additional revenue we need to bridge the gap. We've also done our best to really address the fundamental policy concerns that we've been challenged with, and I think that the commission has been challenged with. You know, we've talked a lot today about the 555 and what has been given up, but the system restack, as we're calling it, is a very significant thing. And what I want to make sure is clear is that, unlike in other contexts where you would rejigger the system either through an interchange agreement where that would federally preempt a state commission, or through a cooperative approach where all the states get together and say, you know, this is our policy, we'll take those costs, and so you don't have to do it, you don't have to pay for them. The company is essentially saying, we're going to take on that risk. We absolutely believe that we will go back to some of our other jurisdictions and say, your policy caused that cost, you should pay for all of it. But as part of the restack, what is very important to notice, it's subject only to your approval. It's not subject to the approval of any other commission. And that's a significant, significant financial risk to the company. Additionally, if we fail in that, we've taken on a $5 to $6 million additional hit in the moratorium year, which will absolutely not allow us an opportunity to earn the approved ROE then. Last, we've also agreed to a significantly low ROE of 10% for interim rates in the next rate case, regardless of what economic conditions may be the next time we come in. So what we've done is we've locked in this 5550 and then shifted all of the risk that
would normally stay with customers through an annual rate case process. And as you've seen, the dollars are really adding up, that it's likely we'd be in at least a couple of times during this period, and said, we're going to set a number and we're going to manage to it. And I think that's a pretty significant part of this settlement that I think is getting lost a little bit in this conversation, that we understand that 5550 appears like a lot, and it's not pocket change. We get that. But it's significantly lower than what we've asked for, and it really does lock us in and shifts all the risks to the company. And we think that a lot of these policy benefits that are also in the settlement really make that as a whole package a relatively good deal for all stakeholders.
Okay. Go ahead. Anything else?
I don't know the exact number to use, but when, you know, you mentioned several times of 5550, but since this was put on the table in, what, mid-December, all the feedback I've ever gotten where that was mentioned was 5555. The zero is easily lost to a lot of people.
It is.
And someone mentioned the potential person or business coming to North Dakota. You know, that's the kind of person we don't want to be discouraged by 555. So what's the, now, like I said, I don't know what the exact number is. 5555 is 15, divided by 4 is 3.75. I know that it would have to be a number larger than 3.75 because the company wouldn't be getting their money as quickly. But whatever is the right fraction, 3.8 or 3.9 or something like that, that takes into account the current and expected interest rates and such, why wasn't the settlement built on 3.8 or 3.9 for 4 years rather than 5.55 and zero?
Well, it's clearly as a function of the refurbishment cycle, that we're spending the dollars in 13, 14, and 15, and recognizing that as that spend tails off, that we can provide a zero a rate moratorium year. If you were to sort of amortize the rate increase over the 4 years, it wouldn't match up with the system spend quite as well. And that's really a big driver of that. Also, when you match, you know, if we were to come in for rate cases year on year, our revenues would match our system spend as well. That's sort of how you traditionally do it. I forecast in the next year I'm going to spend $100, so I need to increase my rates to recover that spending. And so that's why that 5550 is structured that way. It also is a bit of an incentive and a bit of the benefits to our customers to say, you know, thank you for helping us meet our system refresh cycle, and we're agreeing to stay out for a year. I mean, it's really more of an agreement for the company not to come in for a rate case in 2016 and really say, we'll stay out for a year and come in 2017.
Yeah, the timing is really based a lot on our financial forecast. 2016 gave us an opportunity to not have a rate increase. We do need to be successful, though, in trying to recover those restacked, those lost revenues as part of the remix in 2016. Otherwise, 2016 has issues as well. So as Zeb was saying, we've taken the total risk on that by 2016 we can solve that problem with our other jurisdictions and live with the 0% increase. So, but we tried to tailor it based on the forecast so we had a shot at earning the authorized during those years.
How will you, in developing the restack, deal with, I mean, this focuses on state-by-state differences, but differences... federal. I mean, when the federal government just comes in and decides, here's what we're going to do, say, on carbon tax.
Well, absolutely. I think if you read through, we set up, and Mike, just make sure I'm not speaking for you, but we set up a series of principles. And the first principle is each policy choice has benefits and burdens. And if it's the state policy to shift farther from renewables over to gas and coal and other fuels, well, the benefits are likely to be lower costs immediately. Absolutely. I think the numbers bear that out. But again, you lose a lot of the commodity hedge, commodity price hedge, and policy hedges that renewable resources provide to the system. And so it's really going to be a question of trying to balance those more consistent with a leaning towards what we understand as the North Dakota policy mix of more coal and gas. Is that consistent with your thinking?
I think that's fair. There's always risks and rewards of whatever decisions we make. I don't think, just speaking, if I'm still here working on this, the restacking, I'm not gonna go crazy on the restacking. I mean, you can't expect, maybe we should talk about that a little bit, don't expect that staff is going to argue that we want all of this one coal plant because it's the cheapest coal plant of all the coal plants, and we want this one gas turbine because it's the cheapest gas turbine of all gas turbines. That's not really what we're talking about. I mean, the commission has granted advanced determination of prudence on a number of these things. The legacy plants, coal, nuclear, all those, we're still going to share in those. It's almost more forward-looking for me than backwards-looking, except for a few things like those things that just gnaw at us here in North Dakota, the seabed business, the biomass things, soon to be solar. We know up here in the northern climes, solar energy is not that efficient, so go ahead and build it in Minnesota, but pay for it in Minnesota and don't drag us along. So I appreciate Zev's comments. That's to remind us to not go crazy and to remember that we need to hedge our bets accordingly. And if I'm the one involved in it, I'm not gonna cut off our nose to spite our face.
Okay, Julie, anything else?
I don't.
Randy, anything else? I just always gotta have a couple closing comments. I think this last line of discussion is what this is all about. I mean, I appreciate your position, but says the company that lobbies for cap and trade, says the company that lobbies for CO2 rules. I mean, that is the gist of all this. And to say that we would want to do a study that would include other states, I disagree with that completely. It's called state sovereignty. So you have states' rights versus federal rights. So that's where we started in this whole thing. So a study for me is no more than what I think we'll be developing here as a legal record to support some type of decision. And whether we end up rumbling in the Supreme Court on that, we're going to develop a study, depending on no matter how this shakes out. If we have an order that we develop that doesn't get appealed, then that's an order. If we have an order that gets developed and gets appealed and it gets remanded back to us, it's still going to have to be based on something. So I really encourage this study needs to happen because I'm committed to proceeding forward with a record that says probably something other than a 12 CP. So that's why I've been so adamant about the record, because this is all good discussion today, but I anticipate something will have to be developed on a study as to why we do something that's North Dakota specific about these concerns. For the rest of the stuff, I've already said where I'm at in the gas and the winds. I don't think that's a stretch for where we're at in the settlement agreement. It's still that one issue. I really appreciate Julie setting this up. That was a good idea, I think. We still have a record to develop. And there is one issue, though, I would like you guys to really help out with being the company, is this whole issue of used and useful. Maybe talk to Alana some more about that. But that's where I really struggle on renewables, is the North Dakota portion of the law that says if it's used and useful, you get some kind of rate of return. So even if the state says no cost for renewable, there's still that component of used and useful that says you get something. So if you chose to get solar, there's some used and useful value. And so maybe some discussion about that, because that was a really big sticking point in the MDU rate case for the commissioners at that time. And I opted to go to give some return for the company. It was Commissioner Clark and I at that time went the 2-1 vote. So, this could be something, this will be something that bears out big in this rate case, I think. So, all right. Going once, going twice. All right, thank you all. We'll close the work session/pre-hearing conference. Thank you.